Stay tuned for Flash Points.
Flashpoints, legendary filmmaker John Pilger talks with Flashpoints about the U.S.'s war planning against Iran, the war in Iraq, the genocide in Palestine, and the current state of journalism. Also, excerpts from his film, Stealing a Nation. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman with Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.
In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Journalist and documentary filmmaker John Pilger is one of the most influential journalists of our time. His commitment to investigative reporting through the lens of a camera has been demonstrated time and again, and his investigations have actually changed history. Pilger's documentaries include Stealing a Nation, Breaking the Silence, Truth and Lies in the War on Terror and Palestine is Still the Issue. His soon-to-be-released documentary feature, The War on Democracy, will be Pilger's first major film for the cinema. The new work will explore the historic and current relationships of Washington with countries such as Venezuela, Bolivia, and Chile. He joins us from Sydney, Australia. You are in Sydney?
I am in Sydney, yes. This is where I was born and grew up, and I come back here for the summer, which is, the reverse of the northern summer.
Well, it is good to have you back on the Flashpoint show. We really treasure your work. Let's begin right here, if we could, John Pilger, with U.S. threats of some kind of invasion or attack on Iran. Up front, I want you to, I want to get your assessment of how real you think the threat is. And while you address the question, could you talk about Con Plan 8022 and the National Security Directive 35?
Yes. Con Plan was an unclassified plan of preparation. Really, the Pentagon does this for a number of places which are considered, they're considered targets, but they're certainly considered worthy of preparing for engagement, that is, an attack. And Iran, of course, has been under that consideration for a very long time. In fact, since the Islamic Revolution in 1979, when the Shah was overthrown. Now, in the last few years, of course, there's been a lot of manufactured tension towards Iran. this has been based around the suggestion that Iran is about to engage on a nuclear weapons program. And in fact, Iran, which was one of the original signatories of the nuclear non-proliferation treaty, has complied with the letter and spirit of that treaty all the way through. But in 2003, as the Bush administration decided to begin to target Iran in many ways, it began to suggest publicly that Iran was secretly planning to develop nuclear weapons. And without going into all the detail, what it did was to convince the European Union and finally the agency for International Atomic Energy Agency to add new inspections and new demands to its normal inspections under the terms of the treaty, and these were entirely gratuitous. But in fact, you could say that here was the U.S. erecting a straw man. Iran had to reject these inspections. Now, in rejecting these inspections, then Iran would appear to be hiding something and would appear to be defying into the international community and so on and so forth. And it built up to the point where the United States, through a great deal of coercion, persuaded the Security Council that Iran was doing something that shouldn't be doing. And here it has this Complan planning to actually attack Iraq, and that is attacking with deep bunker-busting weapons its nuclear, its civil nuclear facilities, as again I say, which it has a legitimate right to. At the same time, the United States was encouraging both India and Pakistan, which have have a very a problematic relationship over many years, as you know, has been encouraging both of those states to continue developing their nuclear weapons. Iran is being targeted because Iran, under the Shah, was a pillar of American policy in the Middle East. The pillars there were four. There was Iran, there was Saudi Arabia, there was Iraq under Saddam Hussein, and there was Israel. And when one pillar fell, as it were, and the Shah went, American policy under all presidents since 1979 has been to, quote, recover, unquote, Iran. And that's really what this is all about.
Now, Conplan 8022, a national security director, just to be clear, is about the authorization of limited nuclear weapons in this part of the world. And then, of course, yes, we've got a Pentagon plan, as you point out in the article, in your February 1 article, is the air war, the bombing attack, the plans for the bombing attack of Iran. Mm-hmm. And we've got two reasons here that are being stated. One has to do, in terms of the U.S. administration, Iran supplying certain kinds of weapons to the resistance who are resisting U.S. occupation. And the other thing is the nuclear reactor. So, I mean, the contradictions here are pretty extraordinary. On the one hand, you've got Israel and the United States, nuclear renegades, as you say, sharing technology, ready to use their weapons against a country that doesn't have any weapons. And you've got a situation where there are declarations about supplying an opposition in Iran, in Iraq, in which Iran actually supports. Could you talk about this?
Yes, I mean, the irony, if we can mix up this metaphor, the irony runs riot all over that. In 2002, the Bush administration announced a national security strategy, which in effect said that it was prepared to use nuclear weapons outside the strategy of so-called deterrence. Therefore, it was prepared to use them as part of what it calls its preemptive strike strategy. I don't think that's a lot of difference from the Reagan administration, which did threaten to use limited or tactical nuclear weapons. But the Bush administration sort of made it official. That's why this is so dangerous. There is a great debate on this inside the Pentagon. There's a lot of opposition to it inside the Pentagon. But there are also some very influential voices who are for it. Because those voices say maybe the last opportunity that we have to demonstrate nuclear weapons in a pretty cheap, as they call it, operation that is against nuclear facilities in Iran. So this debate is proceeding. So all the other questions you raise are really to do with how this can be justified. And part of the justification, as you refer to, is Iran helping the Iraqi resistance. All right, let's the Iraqi resistance is principally Sunni. The Iranians are Shia. There is a resistance growing, certainly re-emerging among many of the southern the southern Shia. There's no question about that around Basra, and certainly in the early days there was something of a united front between the Shia and the Sunni, but really the principal resistance, the one that keeps attacking the Americans day after day, are the Sunni. To suggest that the Iranian government would then want to arm and support the Sunni, who are also now attacking the Shia, as the Shia are attacking the Sunni, is really absurd. But in any case, putting that principle aside, there have been a number of investigations, one of them done by the British military authorities in the south, which is their part of their patch in Iraq, and they found no evidence of weapons coming across to Iraq from Iran. No evidence. There was also an investigation by the Los Angeles Times. They also found no evidence. And I think there was also one by the New York Times. But certainly the British investigation was pretty conclusive. Not only that, just the other day, I think it was General Peter Pace, who was the overall commander there, agreed in a press conference that they had no evidence. So here we go again. You know, it's like weapons of mass destruction in Iran, a sort of a roundabout, a merry-go-round, a carousel of, well, allegations that might be half-true but are not true at all. But it builds up a kind of disinformation. It creates an atmosphere of lies, really, that are intended to justify an attack on Iraq. Then you have the ultimate irony. Here you have an invasion force of 40,000 American troops in Iraq. They are the predators. They're the invaders. It was an illegal invasion on the borders of a country that might be accused of sending a few small arms across to an opposition. Can you imagine the equivalent if there was a massed army and along the Rio Grande or something? The whole idea of looking through the world, looking at the world through the eyes of great power and through the intentions and interests and of great power, is really to ignore the bloody truth of that great power. And the truth is basically it wants to keep the Middle East in a state of instability. I believe, and John Bolton said it the other day, to keep a sort of divided Iraq, it really is American policy. In other words, to keep them all at each other's throats is American policy. Because that instability will then cross the border into Iran and destabilize that country. And, of course, the United States will then be the controller of all this instability. That's just a guess, but it looks like it's heading that way.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We're delighted to be speaking with filmmaker, columnist for the New Statesman out of Great Britain, John Pilger. He's talking to us from his home in Sydney, Australia, and we're talking right now about what appears to be a real plan by the United States to attack Iran. Now, one would think with all the posturing by the Democrats in the United States and the recent victories that they just wouldn't stand for it, no pun intended, but this would be the straw, the attack on Iran would be the straw, the catastrophic straw, if you will, that broke the camel's back. But actually, the attack on Iran might be welcomed by many of the people who are saying they are at least posturing that they want to bring some troops home out of Iraq. Could you? And this comes in the context of the involvement of Israel, both militarily and in other ways. Could you talk about that?
Well, there must be a lot of people, I would think millions of people in the United States, who are wondering what their vote last November was all about. There's no question that the vote that put the Democrats into both houses of Congress was a vote to stop the war in Iraq. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It hasn't done that, and it's very unlikely to do that. You have one bill going through that is non-binding, calling on the president to stop doing what he's doing over there. I can't remember the actual wording of it, but what struck me was that it's non-binding legislation. I mean, I personally don't find this surprising, having had a look at the record of the Democrats over recent years, from Hillary Clinton, who voted for the war, to Mr. Obama, who wasn't around to vote for the war, and whose ideas, however popular they may be, are still very woolly. Here we have almost, we have an extraordinary situation. We have the majority of the American electorate saying, stop the war. Either bring them home immediately or name a date and get out. That's by and large what the majority of the electorate are doing, and I would suggest the majority of the population are doing. It's no surprise that people have come round to this. For some time they had to swallow lies from their president and leading figures in the country about connections between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda and all the rest of it. I think everybody knows they're all lies. Everybody knows that weapons of mass destruction were lies. I just hope that they understand that the same lying game is being played over Iran. It may be very difficult for people to understand that in their government, their administration in Washington is an extremely dangerous one, embracing a fanaticism. One only has to look at the words and deeds of Vice President Cheney to understand that. A man who has, with the truth incandescent in front of him, has managed to say the very opposite time and time again in order to justify military action. This is a militarist regime. I think most Americans understand that. And they did what they thought, understandably, would stop it. But it hasn't stopped it. So there's quite a remarkable situation now in the United States. The Iraq war goes on. The administration continues to fortify 14 massive bases in Iraq, which are not hardly talked about at all in the American media. And they don't intend to give up those regardless of what happens. And the administration is talking about, in effect, although they deny it, Mr. Gates denies it, and so so on, but in effect, they're debating, seriously debating, to whether or not they should attack another country. This must give large numbers of people in the United States cause for pause, at the very least, I would have thought.
Well, and then the point here is that the Democrats actually might be cheerleaders. If, I mean, for instance, Nancy Pelosi, when you mention the word Israel, they can do no wrong. That liberal sort of down-home Edwards was in Israel recently saying anything is possible when it comes to Iran.
Yeah.
We hear this from all levels of the Democratic Party. So what we might have here is cheerleaders. This might be the way that the administration takes a whack at what's left at the Democrats by throwing Israel into the mix. And maybe Israel does the initial bombing, or maybe Israel takes a couple of hits because, you know, Iran is going to... I mean, talk about the Israel card here and how that could undermine any resistance to Bush war.
Who has started... Which party has started most of America's wars? Answer, the Democrats. Which party has the closest ties, traditionally, with Israel? The Democrats. Which country is probably the most dangerous in the world today? And I say that, I ask that question not rhetorically, but simply on the basis of its record as the world's greatest infringer of international law. Answer is Israel. You're quite right to raise that. I think all those people, as far as being presenting themselves as politicians who seriously want to stop the war, are fakes. I believe John Edwards went to a conference in Israel recently, organized by, you know, one of the great war lovers of our time, Mr. Netanyahu, in which he said, and I paraphrase him, that dealing with Iraq, in dealing with Iraq, nothing is ruled out. This is all code for we'll attack them.
You mean Iran?
In Iran, oh, yeah. I'm sorry, in Iran. And he had his audience cheering. And he went away with, no doubt he hoped, the Jewish vote in the United States sewn up. Hillary Clinton has long courted the Jewish the Jewish vote, but principally the Zionist vote, because I actually believe that the majority of Jewish people in the United States are extremely worried about the provocative role of Israel. They might not be saying so publicly, but I think they're very worried about it, and I think many of them believe that this aggressive lobby, this powerful Zionist lobby, does not represent them. However, you find people like John Edwards, Howard Dean, Hillary Clinton, and Mary Pelosi, who are pretty well on the same page as the Zionist lobby in the United States. Look at the way Jimmy Carter was attacked when he published his book about apartheid in Israel. In that book, Carter said nothing particularly new. The point about it was that it was being written by a former president of the United States and one who had overseen the Camp David agreement between Israel and Egypt. Therefore, Carter had a lot of authority and has a lot of authority in this area. I think it's also a heartfelt book. it seems to me it may even be the book of somebody who's kept quiet for some time. In other words, it's a truth-telling book. But look at the attacks on Carter from right across the Democratic leadership, as it were. What did Mary Pelosi say? She said that President Carter does not represent the views of the Democratic Party. You know, so the messenger is attacked. Israel has, it is reliably estimated, some 500 thermonuclear weapons, almost all of them targeted in the Middle East. It is not a signatory to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. It has defied United Nations Security Council resolutions and General Assembly resolutions more than any other state on earth. It is a rogue state, literally. I would have thought that is a recipe for disaster. And really, if there was any sense of being a broker for peace in Washington, it would be dealing with the Israel problem, not the Iran problem, the Israel problem.
It is interesting over these airwaves, John Pillager. Barbara Boxer, the senator from California, a very close friend to the new Speaker of the House, a very close friend and relative to the Clintons, said on these airwaves, you know, regarding the situation and the occupation of Palestine, that if these Palestinian mothers would stop sending their kids out with bombs, maybe we could have some peace. And that essentially is the attitude that Israel can do no wrong. And the question now is, what role are they playing here? Are they a motivating force? Will they do the attack? How do you see this unfolding if, in fact, we're going to have this kind of sort of expanded neocolonial policy being pushed forward, as you say, by people who feel it needs to happen now or never?
Mm. Well, I mean, just dealing with that remark about Palestinian mothers sending their boys out and bomb, what a stupid thing to say. I mean, you know, I've interviewed Palestinian mothers whose boys have gone often without them knowing on these dreadful, dreadful suicide missions, or have themselves been blown up in Israeli attacks on refugee camps, and the idea that the Palestinian families embrace the whole idea of suicide bombing is so grotesque. Suicide bombing only began to happen after the second intifada, the second uprising, was provoked and ignited by Ariel Sharon. Provocative march into holy places in Jerusalem. It only began because the Palestinians, after year upon year of resisting with slingshots and the kids with stones and the actual resistance with small weapons, resisting tanks and helicopter gunships and F-16s, resisting the fifth biggest military power on earth in this David and Goliath sense, almost literally. Only then, a few years ago, did suicide bombing start. It is an act of total desperation, which everybody that I've spoken to in the occupied territories grieves. I mean, it's an important thing to answer that kind of rather top of the head and, as I say, stupid remark. What is Israel going to do? Dennis, I don't know. I'm not a very good speculator, actually, of these things. I know that the present regime in Israel is an extreme one. And just as the present regime in Washington is an extreme one. And when you have extreme regimes, as modern history has taught us, then some very awful things are likely to happen. They're prepared to take risks. They don't care about human life on destroying human life on a scale that that other regimes might draw back from. That it's that drawing back that drawing back from the brink. Let's go back to the 63 missile crisis. You know, the drawing back. It was extremely important in that, particularly on the Soviet side, to not having a nuclear war. Well, now we have two governments, and the government in Israel, I don't think, wants to draw back. Look at the way it's savaged Lebanon. I mean, using everything under the sun, from bunker-busting bombs to cluster bombs and... So that's the danger. Now, whether, having said that, it is a big step, even for the regime in Israel, it is a big step then to attack Iran. For them, I suppose, it's a dilemma because they know that in Tehran, they've pretty well worked it out that they've had a look at North Korea. North Korea is now doing a deal with the United States, but North Korea is doing a peaceful deal with the United States, and North Korea was not attacked by the United States, in my view, because it had nuclear weapons. And that lesson must be being debated in Tehran now. Well, why shouldn't we have nuclear weapons? Because if we have nuclear weapons, we're going to then be a deterrent to Israel and the United States, but especially Israel, attacking us. And what Israel is worried about, frankly, I believe, is not being attacked. It is losing its predominant power in the Middle East, whereby it can rule the roost as it does. Yeah, although it forever paints itself as the victim, it is the dominant power because it is so militarily powerful. And I think that's certainly a risk. But as far as predicting what might happen, I don't know is the answer.
And Israel is clearly the dominant power in terms of, or one of the key dominant powers in terms of the U.S. Congress. And that is obviously makes real policy, real negotiation, real anything close to some kind of justice for the Palestinians almost incomprehensible, at least in this country. Certainly journalists don't even know where to start on that story. We're speaking with John Pilger, and we're talking about significant things going on in the Middle East. John Pilger, just very quickly, assess where you see the U.S. Occupation invasion in Iraq now. And, you know, the big story in this country is the increase in troops. I don't even know how you know whether the troops are there or not. Are they there yet or when they will be there? It seems almost like an invisible story, or a story that really, it's about more troops, but it's not really about more troops, is it?
That's right. And what it's not about is what is being done to Iraq. You just follow the debates about whether they're going to be more troops or not more troops, and the impact of this on the political futures of George Bush or Hillary Clinton or whomever. There's almost no mention of the effect of this on the Iraqi people. I think it's every time I go to the United States, if there is any real historical parallel to be drawn, it is like going to the Soviet Union at the depths of their most paranoid period in the Cold War, when it was very difficult to find out really what was going on. It's a different society, of course, and that makes it even, that kind of suppression of information, even more iniquitous in my opinion. But you get no sense in the United States that this adventure in Iraq has caused hundreds and hundreds of thousands of casualties. It has caused 50,000 American casualties if you include the wounded, and most of those wounded are terribly wounded because of the nature of the devices being used in Iraq. And then you have the most reliable survey of casualties in Iraq, which was a survey done by the distinguished John Hopkins School of Public Health, together with Iraqi academics, whereby, and very courageously, the researchers actually went from house to house all over the country, something the journalists don't do anymore, and put together a survey of extraordinary credibility, in which the mean figure of lives lost since the invasion, this is last year, was 655,000 people. Now, we're not even beginning to count the numbers of people maimed. We're not even beginning to count the state of hospitals. I read a Save the Children report the other day in which it said that children were dying because the doctors couldn't get surgical gloves that cost a few cents, couldn't get clean needles in order to set up drips to save their lives. And so it goes on. I get no sense of that in the United States, which has been the prime mover. Its government has been the prime mover of this disaster and tragedy. And that kind of censorship by omission and suppression is really, it should be an issue of great shame for those who pride themselves in certain freedoms in the United States.
And finally, we are speaking with John Piligian. Maybe we could conclude this way, Mr. Piligian. I am really honored to be able to speak with you and to have your voice on our Flashpoint show. The work you've done over the years means a lot to me and to the people who listen to this show, Flashpoints, and the Pacifica audience. And maybe we can come back and address the state of journalism in the context of this fact that there's a refusal to cover what really does appear to be an ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip, where 1.4 million people are being tortured and starved to death slowly, with a policy that's enforced by the Israelis and supported by the West. You talk about the great journalist Amira Haas, who, when she says she does journalism, she says her job is to monitor the centers of power. And she talks about her own family, her own, I believe it was her mother, talking about, who's a Holocaust survivor, talking about this notion of watching from the sidelines as the Germans watched this Nazi Holocaust unfold. Have the journalists become, are we, if you will, the collective we, watching by the sidelines as horrifying things unfold, torture, mass murder, false policies that create wars and devastation? How would you assess the state of journalism?
I think journalists are watching from the side. But I think they're doing more than watching from the side. I think they're part of it. If they were simply watching from the side, then they'd be guilty of the crime, and it is a crime, of silence. But they're not simply guilty of a crime of silence. I think they're actually part of it. I think there would not have been an invasion of Iraq, I believe, had journalists not amplified and echoed the lies of the Bush administration, and in Britain, of the Blair government. I think the media, particularly in the United States, has huge power. That's for good and ill, and for truth-telling above all. And because it didn't tell the truth, it was part of the invasion.
Indeed. We've been saying this on Flashpoints. They don't tell the truth. The media doesn't do its job. It does not inform the public about crucial policies. They're supporting the policies. They're not only supporting the policies with their silence, obviously. Many journalists in this country have been cheerleaders for war, have gone along blindly, and they're ready to do that once again. We have just spent the last 40 minutes with journalist, filmmaker, legendary filmmaker, investigative reporter, John Pilger, and we wanted to end this fundraising job with John, this fundraising drive with John Pilger, whose work we believe in, who is a friend of this show, who is a friend of this network, and who clearly is one of the most important and influential journalists working today. This is our last day of the fundraiser, and we've got things we can offer you. Thank you gifts for the premium of the open flow of information. This is our last day to make a whole bunch of money back. We've got a $6,500 match, and we've got the John Pilger book, in which he addresses some of these key issues of our time, being released in the United States, Freedom Next Time. It's a $100 contribution, 510-848-5732. We've got a 3-DVD Pilger set, Stealing a Nation. The situation around Diego Garcia, really the most extraordinary purging of the people, because the Brits, and particularly the U.S. government, wanted to make a forward fighting base. So they pushed the people off the land, the island, Diego Garcia's smaller island, gassed their animals, and nobody told the story. And then this people almost was wiped out. It was near genocide, a story that Pilger's film, Stealing a Nation, tells. He's got the film Palestine is Still the Issue. 25 years after he goes to Palestine, he goes again, and he finds out it's the same problem. And also, breaking the silence. This is about the lies, the disinformation, pulling the lid off of Bush's phony war on terror. That's the 3-DVD set for a $450 contribution. You can get the 3 DVDs and the book for $500. We've got a $6,500 match, and we need your help. If the work of John Pilger, along with the work of the Flashpoints team, means something to you, this is our last day, $6,500. Will you stand up now? This is it. We're not back tomorrow. We don't have a chance tomorrow. We don't make it today. We don't make the money back today. We don't make it. But we can. We can, and I'd love to do it with John Pilger in the house, if you will. With John Pilger telling a story that we all need to hear. You can get his book, Freedom Next Time, $100 contribution, his 3-DVD set, Stealing a Nation, Palestine is Still the Issue, Breaking the Silence, for $450. Both for $500. And then we've got the Monster Flashpoint Super Pack, where you can get all the things we gave away other than the Pilger stuff. And that's $1,000. That's Ali Abunima, his speech, his book, Howard Zinn, his speech, his book, John Ross, his book, Immigration, Crossing Arizona, the documentary, Hijacking Peter Phillips, Impeach the President, Robert Fisk speaking on Flashpoints, Robert Fisk speaking, his book, a documentary on Katrina, and Spike Lee's documentary on Katrina. That's like, I think, 10 or 11 items for $1,000. You know,
Okay, so those are all the things
What's
you can get.
What's the number?
1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. We're in a $6,500 match. I mean, one person on the line, I thank that. I want to speak right to that one person. I thank you for standing up now on this last day and helping us make this $6,500 match. Could you please, the one person on the line now, could you please call 11 of your friends? Because we're going to need them right now. 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. Okay, now we have two people. Two people who are going to help us make a $6,500 match given to us by anonymous Carolyn and Karen. That means every dollar, if you get the $100 contribution Pilger Freedom Next Time book, we get $200. You give us $100, we get $200. If you get the 3-DVD set, it's $450, we get $900. If you get the book and the set, you give us $500, we get $1,000. We've got six people on the line. We have a $6,500 match, which we have to offer back if we don't make. Is there a seventh person on this last day who will make sure that we don't go into the darkness way below our own goal? We need your help. We have seven people on the line. 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. We have eight people on the line now. 1-800-439-5732. We need, this is it. This is our last day. This is your last chance to vote during this fundraiser that this program means something. That something that John Pilger said meant something to you. Something that we do day in and day out means something to you. It means enough that you will take this action of belief for free speech. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 510-848-5732. If one more of you would just stand up and put your money where your beliefs are, we would be looking very, very good and very respectable. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 510-848-5732. We're in a $6,500 matching period. Every dollar you give us now, up to $6,500, is doubled. I can't tell you how much that means at this point in terms of the Flashpoint's position. Our responsibility in terms of raising money. We need to make that. And we need your help to make that. You can get the Pilger book for $100, the 3-DVD set for $450, the book and the set for $500, the Flashpoint Super Pack with Ali Abanima, Robert Fisk, Howard Zinn, Hijacking Catastrophe, Zapatistas, Making Another World Possible, Crossing Arizona, Impeach the President book, When the Levees Broke, that Spike Lee. You can get all that plus What Lies Beneath. That's another Contributed documentary for $1,000. We need it now. This is it. This not tomorrow. Not tomorrow. Tomorrow's too late. Now. Now we're asking you to pull out the stops. Now we've got a $6,500 match. Now every dollar you give us is double. Now we need your help. 1-800 now, now, now is the word of this fundraising moment. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 10 beautiful lights are lit up. We have two open lines. We cannot make it. We, in order to make our goal, we're going to need to keep every line lit from now and for the next 10 minutes. We can do it. We can do it if you care enough. If you care enough for the work that we do here at Flashpoints, if you care about John Pilger, if you care that he get a platform in this context, then won't you light up that last light with hope? 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 9 people on the line. 3 open lines. If you've got a busy signal, we have room for you now. And we need you now. Because every dollar you give us is doubled. You can get the Pilger book, the $1,000 Flashpoints pack, the $500 pack with the 3 DVDs and the Pilger book. That's not the real premium. You know it, folks. You know. Many of you understand how you would feel if you turned on this show at 5 o'clock and we were not there. We were wiped out because people thought you didn't care. Do you care? We need to defend this show, and you need to help us do it. 1-800-439-5732. We have 4 open lines, 8 people. That's beautiful. Those 8 people are honoring the work. They're honoring themselves. They're honoring their own belief. They're honoring this marvelous mechanism, this university, this invisible university, into the airwaves the information goes. And we use it. We act collectively based on the knowledge that we share together, the knowledge that the mainstream media will not give you. 1-800-439-5732. One more of you, just one more person standing up and taking this action, and we will have done the best we can at this moment. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 510-848-5732. We need to keep them burning. We need to keep the station alive. We need to strengthen the infrastructure of the station. We need to protect this idea invented 57 years ago. Same age as me. God, I'm just me and Pacifica came in the same moment. 1-800-439-5732, 510-848-5732. We have an open line. Won't you stand up now? Won't you take that action towards belief, towards free speech, towards the open flow of information? 3 open lines. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 510-848-5732. We've got 3 open lines. We've got about 7 minutes left, and we've got a $6,500 match. Every person calling right now, if you give us $100 and you get the John Pilger book, Freedom Next Time, we get $200. If you get the DVD Pilger packet, Stealing a Nation, Palestine is Still the Issue, and Breaking the Silence for $450, we get $900. If you get the book and the packet for $500, we get $1,000. If you got 50, if you got 25, if you can slip us a 20 or an 80 or a 90, or a 200 or a 5,000. This is the last day, and we've got a $6,500 match. Maybe somebody out there has $6,500. Maybe somebody will match this dollar for dollar. Maybe 6 of you have $1,000 each. Maybe 12 of you, 13 of you have $500 each. Whatever it is, we're down to 6 minutes, and we need your help now. 1-800, there are 4 people on the line. We had a beautiful rush, Nora, but now is the time. People can't turn our backs. Did I say this is the last day? Did I say we're not going to be back here tomorrow? Flashpoints isn't. We need to make the money today. We need to make the statement and make the money right now. 1-800-439-5732. You know what? We're only halfway through. We've made $3,700. We've got 3K to go. And 5 minutes. What if I just didn't say anything, Nora? What if this is what people heard when they tuned in at 5 o'clock? This could happen. This is what we're trying to stand up against.
That's right.
510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. We got one wonderful, generous taker for the Flashpoint Super Pack of $1,000. That's Ali Abu Nima, Robert Fisk, Howard Zinn, John Ross's book, Hijacking Catastrophe, Impeach the President book, Crossing Arizona, Spike Lee's DVDs, and the Common Ground Relief Collective's DVDs of about Katrina.
And you can get any one individually, too.
Exactly. You can make your own super PAC, but we need you to call now, 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. You know, you say you're as old as Pacifica. Well, I wouldn't be here if Pacifica didn't exist, and that's literal, because my parents met here at KPFA in the 1960s. They're both programmers. So if KPFA didn't exist, I wouldn't be here. It'd be a whole different show.
Oh, man. That's good news.
So keep Pacifica and KPFA alive so that we can support the next generation of Pacifica poster children. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. We have 7 open lines. We only have a few minutes left. We need takers for the super PAC for $1,000. We know you're out there. If you've been waiting for the last minute, now's your chance. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. You can also get the John Pilger's new book, Freedom Next Time, for a $100 contribution. Get the 3 DVD set, Stealing a Nation, Palestine is Still the Issue, and Breaking the Silence for $450. Get them both for $500 contribution. We have 5 open lines. We need you to call now. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. If you've got a little extra, you can pay the way for someone who doesn't have it at this point. If someone is listening from prison, if they're listening from a shelter, if they're listening from wherever they are and they can't afford the $25 minimum contribution, or they can't afford the $450 contribution that you can get John Pilger's 3D DVD set for, then step in for them. Make a contribution on their behalf. 510-848-5732, 1-800-439-5732. We've got 4 open lines. We need you to call now. We're only halfway to our goal of matching the $6,500 contribution. We can do it, though. We can do it. 510-848-5732 or 1-800-439-5732.
510-848-5732. If you've got $5,500 or $5,000, we've got 3 minutes left. We've got 3 minutes left to make a $6,700 fund, matching fund, and we need to make this. And you can make all the difference now. We have 3 minutes left in this fundraising drive. This show has 3 minutes left to make this money, and then we're done. And I hope you'll help us do it. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, stand up for the alternative. Speak out for Free Speech Radio. Say yes to the fight back, no holes barred, scrappy Pacifica radio that speaks truth to power. We're down to 2.5 minutes, $6,500 match, 1-800-439-5732. Get the Pilger book for $100. Get the entire Pilger package for $500. Get the Flashpoint Super Pack for $1,000. Get the Super Pack and the Pilger Pack for $1,500. You can get the Pilger for $500, the Super Pack for $1,000. We get $1,500. We actually get $3,000. If you take the entire package, both packages, we get $3,000. You give us $1,500, we get $3,000. 1-800. Now we're down. We're down to the absolute wire. 2 minutes. 1-800-439-5732. 4 open lines. 510-848-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Is there not a 9th person who's going to stand up and put your money where your beliefs are? Number 9, I'm talking to you, wherever you are, in San Francisco, out in Marin, up north in Sonoma, down south in Santa Cruz, out in wherever you are, please stop and think about the alternative and help your daily investigative news magazine get over this hurdle right now. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 510-848-5732.
5732. There's another person who cares, and another person who cares. You have time to call. You have time to express your support for the Flashpoint Show and this fundraiser by calling right now. 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. 510-848. 5732. We have got 30 seconds left. How about it, folks? 1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732.